Hello and welcome to fatty acid testing. There are three parts to the functional testing: fatty acid testing, organic acid testing, and amino acid testing. And all three of these types of acids in the body are functionally relevant. And when you do testing to see what's increased, what's decreased, what the status of these are, gives you a lot of information about the background, the nutritional status, amino acid status, vitamins, minerals, and neurotransmitters. And it's quite interesting to be able to indirectly test those, which is why we call them functional testing. A lot of people ask me all the time, well, what about testing for vitamins and minerals? Is there a test that we can do to see how much vitamin A we have and how much vitamin C we have and how much vitamin D we have? Well, yeah, vitamin D is pretty easy to test and that's pretty accurate, but most of the others are really challenging to test directly in the blood. And if you can test them directly in the blood, not only are they expensive to do individually, but it doesn't really matter how much you have in the blood. It's how much is functionally active. And that's why we're doing these three functional tests: fatty acid, organic acid, and amino acid, because that gives us a functional look at your body. We can tell by levels that are high and low how certain enzymes are functioning in your body. The one that's the easiest for you to interpret, which would be the fatty acids. We started to look at the fatty acid testing when we looked at the immune system, because the balance of your fatty acids determines how well your body functions with regard to inflammation. And inflammation is one of the important aspects of your immune system, is creating inflammatory processes in response to pathogens and other invaders that are dangerous to your body. So it's a protective mechanism. And fatty acid testing gives us an idea of the inflammatory markers in your body. But also, by doing fatty acid testing, we can determine how well your nutrients are, balance of, say, some of the B vitamins, some of the minerals, and some of the antioxidants. So the information in the presentation isn't, there's no diagnosis here. When you do these tests with people, you want to be really clear with people that you're using them to functionally assess their bodies, and you're using them to get information, but it's not to replace the medical advice or the work with a one-on-one practitioner, but it is something that you can do, unless you are licensed to do that and who have medical degrees, then it can be diagnosis. Although it's even touchy when you do functional tests and when you do alternative type holistic things, that with the medical boards and such, that they don't necessarily consider some of these things diagnostic, but more informational. So we're really delving into the body. We're taking a sneak peek, a window into the body, to see how well things are functioning. And by looking at metabolites of certain amino acids, fatty acids, and organic acids, we can tell how well the body's doing in terms of nourishment, how well the body is replenished with B vitamins, vitamin A, various minerals, and antioxidants. So we're going to review a little bit, first of all, about what the fatty acid test is, what kind of information it gives us, and how it plays into determining the nutritional status as well as the immune system status of the person that you're working with. There's three ways that I've used the fatty acid testing. There's three different ways that you can do it with Metametrics and Genova. There might be other labs. There probably are other labs that do these tests. I've only worked with Metametrics and Genova because if you have a lab that works well, then why not? And they're all pretty similar. There's the blood spot fatty acid test, which is something that's very empowering for people to do because they get the kit. They poke their finger just as if they're doing a blood glucose test, and they put drops of blood on a little card and they send it back to the lab. It tests a subset of the full fatty acid metabolism, but it tests for us the omega-3 and 6s, the essential fatty acid metabolism, as well as the inflammatory fats, the trans fats, the arachidonic acid. So it gives us a ratio that we can use as an inflammatory marker for a person. Another way to do it is the full blood, where the blood is drawn from the vein, And then instead of just the short version of the test, the long version of all the fatty acids, the omega-3s, the omega-6s, the omega-9s, a lot more intermediates. It's a more complicated test to interpret, and in people who are not getting results from one of these other tests or who have some specific immune dysfunctions, it could be very useful to do. It is more expensive, in the neighborhood of twice as expensive as the blood spot. The blood spot is easy to do. You just have to have it sent to a person. They don't have to go to a lab to have their blood drawn. So if you're not in a position where you can either draw blood or write a prescription for them to go to a lab to get blood drawn, it's a great way to do it. Although with direct labs in the picture, the full blood one can be ordered through direct labs, so the patient can go there directly and order that. And then there's an erythrocyte, which is the red blood cell plasma, red blood cell membrane fatty acids. And they're slightly different. I haven't been able to detect any major differences between them, although it's on my bucket list of to-dos is to get somebody and submit both on the same day and get a sense of how different, if any, those results would be. The little diagram I put there was just pictorially to show you, and we'll go into it in more detail, but there's definitely a lot of information that you can get when you do one of these tests. One of the major things that you're looking at in the blood spot is these major fatty acids, the EPA, DHA, the GLA, DGLA, arachidonic acid. And those are the main things that we're looking at in the blood spot. And that gives us an assessment of how our essential fatty acid metabolic tree is actually working. And they also show linoleic acid and alpha-linolenic acid, which are at the top here. So what I would suggest is that you take a look at this chart, and in the background, you know, after class, it's kind of, this is something to really put to memory. And what I mean by put to memory is, what are the good sources of alpha-linolenic acid, which is on the right-hand side as you're looking at the picture? That's the omega-3. The good sources, as we talk about a lot, are flax, chia, hemp, and walnuts. Good sources of alpha-linolenic acid. On the other side of the spectrum, the omega-6s are the sesame, sunflower, almond, pumpkin, and the list goes on. Brazil nut, hazelnut, corn oil, soybean oil, they all have linoleic acid. As we've discussed, there's a shortage of linoleic acid is hard to find in our standard diets, on any diets, whether it's a raw foods diet, whether it's a standard American diet. They may be a little bit low in a diet that's an extreme low-fat diet, because that's going to be low in every kind of fat. But in the average moderate to high-fat diet, there's going to be plenty of omega-6 on the linoleic side, and not enough usually on the linolenic side. So we really focus on having a balance. This test will tell you how well you're balanced. In addition, the spreadsheet where you can actually put numbers in of, say you had a cup of chia seeds and half an ounce of almonds and 2 ounces of coconut. You could put that all in the spreadsheet and determine what your intake ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 is on any given day. And when you have your people that you're working with fill that in, it gives them a sense of control over their diet, over their recipes, where they can very easily exchange one fatty food for another, one nut or seed for another in a recipe, so that they can get a favorable ratio. This fatty acid testing will give us in the blood what's that ratio. And it's been determined that the higher that ratio, the higher the amount of omega-6 to 3, once it gets above about 3 to 1, you're starting to get into higher risk for inflammatory diseases, whether that be inflammatory joint diseases, cardiac diseases, multiple sclerosis, even things like depression go up when you have a higher ratio. And I've seen changes on these tests where we've done a test, got some abnormals, affected changes dietarily and supplement-wise, and retested on a regular basis and seen dramatic shifts. And I've got some of those examples in this slide presentation. But the other thing I'd like you to memorize is which of the nutrients are cofactors for an enzyme called delta-6 desaturase. Delta-6 desaturase is the enzyme that helps to convert the linoleic acid or the alpha-linolenic acid, the short chain fats that you have dietarily, into the longer chain fats, which are the ones that are more functionally active in your system. So on the omega-6 side, linoleic acid gets converted by the enzyme delta-6 desaturase into GLA, which is gamma-linoleic acid. Gamma-linoleic acid can be incorporated dietarily or supplement-wise into your system with borage oil, blackcurrant oil, and evening primrose oil. Also, there's a fair amount of GLA in hemp seeds. Fair amount there. On the other side of the fence, on the omega-3 side, alpha-linolenic acid, which can be found in, like I said, flax, chia, hemp, and walnuts, and small amounts in other foods. They get converted into EPA and DHA, eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid. Those are EPA and DHA. Those two can be found dietarily, and those are going to be found in anything related to the sea. So fish, algae, marine phytoplankton. So those are going to contain EPA and DHA in a preformed format. Most of the dietary omega-3 will come in flax, chia, and hemp and walnut, especially if in someone who's following a more vegetarian or vegan diet. So you need to have intact the vitamins and the minerals to convert the alpha-linolenic and the alpha-linoleic down to their longer chain fats. And those very important nutrients are your B vitamins, especially B3, B6, and B12, vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, magnesium, and biotin. Not to say other nutrients aren't also important, but these are the major ones. So you can have someone who's eating a boatload of omega-3 fats in the form of alpha-linolenic and not creating much in the way of EPA-DHA because that delta-6 desaturase enzyme isn't working optimally. It can be deficiently working because of deficiencies in these nutrients, vitamin B3, B6, B12, vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, magnesium, biotin. But also, there's certain foods that deplete the activity of delta-6 desaturates, and those are alcohol, coffee, food additives, and trans fats, like partially hydrogenated oils, oxidized heated fats that have been converted to their trans form. So it's really a matter of looking at a person's diet. A lot of literature states that you can't count on getting your omega-3s from flax, chia, hemp, and walnuts because you can't convert. That enzyme works very inefficiently. The reason that enzyme works so inefficiently is because we tend to be deficient. As a culture, I don't mean you and I specifically, but as a culture, we tend to be deficient in those nutrients because there's a lot of refined foods being eaten that's stripped of those nutrients. And then there's a lot of processed foods being eaten, a lot of alcohol and coffee. And even among people who eat really healthy diets, a lot of them are still addicted to their coffee and still consume alcohol. So these kinds of things destroy the delta-6 desaturase activity, so you can't make your EPA DHA from there. And that's when people do better, when they supplement directly with EPA DHA, either in the form of fish oils or eating fish or algae oils. The algae oils are new on the scene and are a boon for people who feel very strongly about sticking with 100% vegan or vegetarian diet and don't want to consume fish in any way, shape, or form. They can get these EPA DHA in significant amounts in these algae oil capsules. Okay, there are some that are liquid. Most of the ones I've seen that are liquid are just the DHA form, but not don't contain significant amount of EPA. So that's a good thing to know, especially if someone is not converting, and you'll see that when we look at the test itself. So as with everything else we've been looking at, assessment is not just analyzing lab tests. Assessment is doing a good history, finding out what people are eating, doing diet records, and looking for other lifestyle factors that will deplete these. So for example, if someone is under a lot of stress, producing a lot of cortisol, they're going to have inhibition of their B vitamins and their vitamin C, because they're going to be utilizing a lot of it towards just quote unquote staying alive, right? Running away from tigers. Okay. Some people don't get enough magnesium because they're not getting enough leafy greens. So they need to be taking more in that regard. So really understanding this flow chart, and I'll give you in the next couple of slides, you'll have a bigger picture of this to really see it. I have this flow chart pretty much in my brain. When I start to talk to people, I see this flow chart. It's pretty amazing. And you can kind of talk to people about how to improve their inflammatory processes and their fatty acid status when you understand this flow chart. This is the inflammatory cascade. This is how your body, all of our bodies, produce inflammation. We have the omega-3s and omega-6s that we just talked about, alpha-linolenic on the left-hand side, linolenic on the right-hand side. Right-hand side is omega-3, delta-6 desaturase produces EPA, which produces prostaglandins, PGE-3 and 1, and that displaces arachidonic acid, which is inflammatory. So the more EPA you have, the more you produce PGEs, the more that displaces arachidonic acid, and it basically creates this fireman. You know, the firefighter is putting out the fire. On the same thing on the omega-6 side, the GLA gets converted to DGLA, which is a really potent anti-inflammatory, except when it's in excess, because you're having too much omega-6 in your diet, it can get converted to arachidonic acid, which is pro-inflammatory. But if you've just got the right amount, you get it converted to PGE1, and PGE1, prostaglandin E1, is an anti-inflammatory. If you go further down the chart, you've got leukotrienes and thromboxanes. On the left-hand side are the leukotrienes, which tend to be the most potent. And when you look at the thromboxanes on the right, they're a little bit less potent. When you have somebody who takes something like a nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory medication, it will decrease the production of thromboxanes, but not decrease the production of leukotrienes. You need to do steroids to thwart this pathway further along the way to get the leukotrienes under control. However, the good news is when we look at the next slide and see the nutritional approach can actually work on both sides of the pathway when you get that right. So here we go. This is the full-blown version of what I showed you just a little bit ago, which is the nutritional modulation. And you'll see again the delta-6 desaturase, the linoleic, alpha-linolenic, and then what converts down to the DHEA. But on here, we've added in a little bit more vitamin E and curcumin. And curcumin is the active ingredient in turmeric. Very, very potent, which is why turmeric is such a good anti-inflammatory and antioxidant, is that it thwarts the production. It decreases the production of arachidonic acid. So it stops that. So EPA, DHA will displace arachidonic acid, and vitamin E and curcumin will decrease the production of arachidonic acid. So between those nutrients, you're getting a very potent anti-inflammatory effect. And what you're doing, as I always like to say, as we're doing the good fats in the diet and we have all the nutrients intact, what's happening is you're creating strong firefighters, and they're able to fight off the inflammation. And then these other enzymes, lipoxygenase and cyclooxygenase, are inhibited by bioflavonoids, ginger, vitamin E, EPA, zinc, and selenium, which you see on the chart. Selenium works just on the leukotrienes and not so much on the thromboxanes. So what you have is, through nutrition, both dietarily and supplementation-wise, you have a means to decrease inflammation naturally. So the purpose of this presentation is to give you a good understanding of inflammation, how it happens, how you can intervene, but more so how you can see what's going on in the person. So when we look at the person's inflammatory risk, an important thing to look at is the AA-EPA ratio. AA meaning arachidonic acid, which is the inflammatory fatty acid, found mostly in animal foods with the exception of peanuts. Peanuts have a high amount of arachidonic acid. And the EPA, which is eicosapentaenoic acid, which is found in the fish and in your algae and phytoplankton and spirulinas and things like that, but also is converted in your body when you have the proper cofactors from those food forms of omega-3 short chain like flax, chia, hemp, and walnuts, and others in smaller amounts. So the optimum ratio of AA to EPA is between 1.5 and 3. Dietarily, you want to be consuming between 1.5 and 3 ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. So it's okay that the omega-6 is more than the omega-3. In fact, that's what's intended. However, it's when there's way too much omega-6 than 3 that we get into trouble, which is why that spreadsheet is invaluable for helping you to get that imbalance and helping you to coach people to keep it in balance, because they have a direct assessment there of, oh, I have too much omega-6 in my diet. I better calm it down. What can I do to balance this? How can I change this ratio in this recipe? I remember making a recipe for a chia pudding, and it had some nuts and seeds in it. And when I did the ratio, it was like a 4 or a 5 to 1. And I thought, oh, that's too much omega-6. How can I change it? Well, all I did was change out the nuts. I took out some of the almonds and put in macadamia nuts. Macadamia nuts don't have much of either omega-6 or 3. It balanced out my ratio and I was good. In another case, I did it with coconut. Coconut doesn't have much in the way of either, so it's a real good balance. It gives you some of the really good saturated fatty acids without you having to throw off your ratio. And actually, there's one thing I need to tell you about coconut. Lauric acid and myristic acid in the coconut actually increase the conversion of the short chains, the hemp, flax, chia, the ones that have the alpha-linolenic, that increases the conversion from there into the longer chain EPA DHA by tenfold. So it's really a good idea when you're having some of those dietary short chains like flaxseed pudding or something, or a hemp seed milk, that you add some coconut to it to help that convert better. So if you have a ratio of AA EPA above 10, it's considered unwell. It's considered to be disease state. It might be that you have inflammation in your cardiovascular. It might be that you have multiple sclerosis or some other sort of neurodegenerative type disease, or a musculoskeletal inflammation or depression or other neurologic neurotransmitter imbalances that rely on having enough EPA. So really important. Anything above 15 is an extremely high level of inflammation. When you test Americans, the average American serum AAEPA is 11. Okay? That's not good. That's the average. If you test the people with chronic illness and disease, they typically have scores above 15. So this is a ratio, when we look at the test results itself, that you want to pay careful attention to when you're working with people, and use it. You can use a lot of this, you can use as ammunition, right? You can use it as a means for getting people motivated. Wow, this ratio means you have a lot of inflammation. If you're not noticing it in your joints or in your brain, it could be that it's in your cardiovascular system and you're at higher risk for heart disease. So this is a list, a more detailed list for you, of the delta-6 desaturase inhibitors. When they test to see how well people convert, they find that the EPA-DHA ratio, the conversion from to EPA-DHA from ALA, is estimated to be between 2 and 8%, or an average of 3.8%. That's a very low conversion ratio. And what that means is you need to be eating a lot more of those short chains than you do of the longer chains. Although there was one study that I found that found it to be 36% in females. So if you've got somebody who is on a really clean diet, who doesn't have these delta-6 desaturase inhibitors in their diet, like the trans fatty acids, margarine, shortening, hydrogenated fats, which most Americans have lots of in their diet, who don't have an excess of omega-6, they're not eating almond butter all day long, they're not chomping on nuts all day long, they're not pouring corn oil into everything that they use, or soybean oil, or eating a lot of soy, they have an excess of oleic acid. Not that oleic acid is bad, which is found in olive oil, but it's an excess. So if you're just like pouring olive oil on everything, you could inhibit the delta 6 desaturase. Sugar is for sure an inhibitor. Caffeine, alcohol, food additives, insufficient protein, not so much insufficient protein in the diet, insufficient protein absorption and digestion. You can have plenty of protein in the diet, but if your stomach acid is not up to par, you're not producing enough digestive enzymes, you're under stress and you're shutting down those enzymes, you can have a protein deficiency. So protein deficiency definitely inhibits the delta 6 desaturase. So when you start to see some of the results I'll share with you where somebody has really good alpha-linoleic acid or linoleic acid, they have plenty of that, but their downstream metabolites like GLA and DHA and EPA are low, then you know that there's a problem with delta 6 desaturase and you need to be talking to them about some of these things and really looking carefully at their diet. And then deficiencies of certain nutrients, biotin, vitamin E, zinc, B12, B6, B3, magnesium, and some of the others that were on the chart. And definitely smoking. So all of these inhibit your delta 6 desaturase, and you'll be able to tell by the end of this presentation, you'll be able to know when you look at one of these tests how the delta 6 desaturase enzyme is doing. So some of the things that you can coach your people to do to improve their delta 6 desaturase is using coconut, and it says coconut oil because lauric acid and myristic acid, it turns out too, are very important, but it's coconut anything, coconut cream, coconut, whole coconut, fresh young coconut, fresh mature coconut, anything that has that coconut oil in it. I personally am not a real big fan of supplementing oils unless it's for therapeutic reason. So you look at one of these tests and say there's no way they're going to get enough coconut to do this. Let's temporarily put them on some coconut oil therapeutically to mix in with their other stuff. That's fine. And small amounts, of course, in culinary use is not going to hurt you, but I just don't like to use oils because they are fractured foods. You're missing the rest of the nutrients in that food. And these are the other ones, biotin, vitamin E, vitamin C,
B3, B6, and B12.
Zinc, magnesium. When you look at what is required, what the government says you need, which, you know, we know we can take with a grain of salt, but it's a ballpark. It gives us a ballpark. ALA, alpha-linolenic acid, 2.2 grams per day. That's assuming that you have a good conversion. EPA, DHA, 0.65 grams a day. So you really only have to have less than a gram of EPA, DHA. In the average person, of course, people with inflammatory conditions are going to need a lot more of it for therapeutic reasons. But the point is that I recommend that if you don't eat preformed EPA, DHA, and if you assume that that ratio is going to be like, say, 8%, like the chart said, like the studies say, even on the high end, even if it's 10%, you really want to be getting approximately 10 grams of ALA per day. Alpha-linolenic acid. So if you look at the chart here, flax seeds in 1 ounce contain 1.8 grams. Hemp seeds contain 2.8. Chia seeds contain 5. Big difference, eh? So what you want to do is look at, okay, how can I do this? Well, an ounce of chia seeds with an ounce of hemp seeds and an ounce of flax seeds is going to give you pretty close to that 10. So it's really good. But if you look at things like sesame seeds or sunflower seeds, they have very little omega-3 and very high omega-6. So if we look at our ratios, flax seeds is 0.2. It's excellent for skewing that ratio in favor of omega-3. Hemp seeds are right there at the 3, which is the perfect ratio. Chia seeds are 0.32. So again, like flax seeds, that can really help to balance some of those higher omega-6 foods. Pumpkin seeds, they're always told to me to be, oh, they're really good in omega-3s. They're actually not a very good source. And when you look at the ratio, it's 100-1 in favor of omega-6. Poppy seeds are 96-1. Sesame seeds are 67-1. Sunflower seeds are 85-1. So not to say these aren't good seeds. They have a lot of good properties. But you don't want to be focusing on just getting those seeds. You have to look at the ratios. And the spreadsheet is an invaluable resource that you can use yourself. You're welcome to share with your people. It's just, it's a